is time once again for Truth About Markets on Residence 104.4 with Max and Stacy. The show that takes a few minutes to get started, but then it gets really good.
Is that going to be on our poster advertising our show?
Yes, all over ring roads of the UK, you'll see this giant poster. The show that's slow to get started, but then it gets really good.
So, what I'm looking at right now is a Poxford and Kaiser.
Yeah.
Who had a bit of a chicken pox that you acquired on the from the Eurostar in London on the way back to Paris. There was this little girl running around us, all Poxridden. And I did remember we were like, oh, this is weird. It's Dickensian. She had like hundreds and hundreds of pox on her.
Yeah.
Well, little did we know that you hadn't had it as a child. Yeah. As your mom now informed you.
Yeah, we were making fun of this little girl. She's crying. We were like, ha ha, you have chicken pox, ha ha ha. And then I got it. And that was a big drag, man. It's not fun. It's a pox. A pox, the Epoxamegan apocalypse. Apocalyptic. It's apocalyptic, for sure.
Well, speaking of apocalypse, you know, everybody's warning that it's the apocalypse this weekend. It's the Greek end. It's the end of Greece. If they vote the wrong way. How many times have we had this over the past few years? You know, I'm sure it's always been with us, but it's an acceleration of this, this, you know, collaboration between politicians and the media. Like a headline reads right here. Alistair Campbell says Murdoch asked Blair to speed up Iraq war. So Murdoch was pushing Blair to hype up the, you know, the, remember how in the UK everybody was told, I know secret stuff, and the secret stuff about Saddam Hussein, he could wipe out London in a press of a button.
Yeah.
Well, so can Jamie Dimon, but it depends on whether or not they decide to tell you about this.
Well, you mentioned a bunch of stuff there. Well, the Blair Witch Project, Tony Blair. So Murdoch told him to speed things up to because Murdoch was unhappy at the pace at which Blair was committing genocide, and he wanted to...
No, the invasion itself. They hadn't yet started their genocide. He wanted them to enter, send troops, and start fighting.
Oh, yeah. So it was... the dodgy dossier, and then Murdoch grew impatient because, again, I guess you have to ask yourself, because he was himself bored with the rate at which people were being murdered around the world in his name, or he just was anxious to get more paper sold that quarter to make a payment on some yacht or something.
Well, remember, he's a man of Leo Strauss. These are men who... believe that only they know and deserve to be the elite. And the most of the masses are ignorant and stupid and use religion and fear and, you know, junk entertainment to keep them stupid. Mm-hmm. And most people, you know, 90% of the population happily complies. Oh. And you'll have his mad, deranged, passionate disciples. Many in America are fanatical about supporting Fox News, his empire there. Now, he wanted this acceleration of the war because he was, you know, he's a neocon, right? He's a Leo Straussian neocon. Paul Wolfowitz is also a Leo Straussian disciple. So they have this notion that they should architect the world in their image. And I mean, you see it happening. Their religious fanaticism spreading is part of their plan. This is what they want. But you know, the same sort of thing is going on with Greece. This notion that, you know, if you don't sort it out now, we're all going to blow up. If you, the peasants, get in our way of our plans, we're all going to die.
Right. Well, so that's right. There's this big push about the Greece thing, that there's going to be a huge event this weekend, that there's going to be an election if the left-wing people win the election. I guess the feeling is there's going to be market turmoil above and beyond what we've already seen. But as you point out, this is a story that never gets old. They keep saying the same thing. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up to get your market panic served up like a slushy cone or something wrapped in a Murdoch newspaper. So the urgency factor is, well, it's a trick that never fails to work. People are, you know, easily spooked. And when you talk about their money, they get all spooky, spooky. They're like, oh my God, it's a panic. I would love it if the global market crashed on Monday and there were bank holidays starting on Monday. That would be fantastic. But, you know, because we've been calling for it and for a few years and we're prepared for it. You know, unlike Murdoch, though, we can't get people to just do our bidding. I mean, we have to wait on market. We have to wait on the actual history of events to unfold in real time based on insight and observation. Unlike Murdoch, we can't force history to suddenly speed up for his convenience.
Well, we don't have masses of ignorance on our side. We can't whip it up or we don't seek to, you know, this ignorance, it applies to this latest rush. We have to go bomb Syria. We have to bomb Syria. We have to destroy those people. We must save those people being slaughtered by the evil Assad regime. And that's the only story you're able to even, you have to panic and screech anywhere with the same tone and the same screech as everybody else. You must screech the same. Otherwise, they target you like the mass, the ignorant masses who don't realize, but they're operating on behalf of Murdoch, of Clinton, of Obama, of Cameron. But they don't want to think. They don't want to question. They don't want. They just want bombing and killing and in order to make them feel better, like they did when they bought that plastic wristband from Bob Geldof. That made them feel better, and they want to feel like that again. Now, Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, you know, that FAZ, the important paper in Germany, they've just done a piece which hasn't gotten any attention in the Western media until last night. I linked to it on Twitter, and you know what? Paul Wall from the Times of London, he picked it up. He said, "Oh, Stacey Herbert, via Stacey Herbert, I have this link that Faz is saying that the Hula massacre," mm-hmm. which, you know, I've had lots of people we know who are shrieking on my Facebook page that we must go defend these people, we must bomb Assad. Now they're saying, in two pieces they've covered, they've sent investigative journalists down there, that in fact it was the rebels who killed these people, that it wasn't Assad-aligned forces, and that the most of the dead are in fact former Sunni, like the rebels, who converted to Shia Islam. And so they were, and some of them were Alawites. This is what the newspaper in Germany is saying. Now, the Vatican newspaper, Fides, they also wrote about this, that they've been, all these Catholic churches are being burned, and 9,000 Christians were driven from a town right nearby Hula by these same rebels. They were forced out. All the minarets were blasting that you better get out of town or we're going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
But these, again, this story is nowhere about the Christians being driven from the town. 9,000 of them. They mostly went to Damascus. Now, nowhere in the Telegraph, the Times, the Guardian do you see this. Nowhere, especially the Guardian is really pushing war, war, war. They're like doing the Rupert Murdoch of this campaign. But, you know, obviously there's lots of lies and propaganda during wars. But shouldn't we be asking the question instead of just taking every single panicking constantly off the cliff?
You know, all the safeguards against panic mongering and fear mongering have been removed in society and on Wall Street. You know, it used to be that you couldn't start a panic on Wall Street as easily as you can now, there were institutions in place that would prevent that from happening. You'd have lots of competition amongst different banks, not the way it is now with just a few banks. You had rules and regulations and things like Glass-Steagall, which prevented panic from spreading from one side of the street to the other side. That's all been removed. And on the political front, you can start these massive panics because there's nothing, there's no media competition. There's no media out there reporting on anything other than the panic mongers' latest panic message. And on the ground, there's an unlimited number of guns. People can just pick them up and start shooting each other based on the panic. So it creates more panic. So there's no, there's nothing to stop it. And this is all based on the timeline driven by a male prerogative. And if it were all driven by a female prerogative, then everything would be a lot more deliberate, slowed down, and purposeful. There would be a purpose for life. But since females have been systematically, you know, marginalized, we have life without purpose. Just guys running around aimlessly, shooting each other, and manipulating markets.
Well, everything is like that film Wag the Dog. Everything you see, it's like engineered massacres, whether it's in a war zone or a financial war zone. They're engineered massacres, like the flash crash is the same as this Hula massacre. Is we'll never know, of course, about the Hula massacre because we can't get in there. I mean, the Christian church is actually, ironically, the only one able to get there because there are lots of nuns and priests that live in the area. You know, there's the ancient Orthodox church there, and there's also Catholic churches. So they're the only ones with these people on the ground able to give some information that are outside the Sunni Shia split. So their information is that, you know, the rebels are bombing people. But, you know, there, but this same sort of Hula massacre with all the, you know, fog of war is something that we're seeing in the financial markets, whether I said, as I said, the flash crash or now Athens, where, you know, they're creating like such apocalyptic headlines over and over and saying, be scared. But as we covered in our show this week, it could be the short change debt con.
Well, I think it seems that in the Greek situation, there's a certain amount of paralysis on a number of fronts, and the country is running out of cash. I think they only have 2 or 3 weeks left of worth of cash. They're already running out of critical medicine at the health facility, so people are just dying in the hospital because of lack of basics like, I guess, penicillin and things like this. So it looks like they're just going to run out of cash, at which point it becomes a huge humanitarian crisis like Darfur or something. Then I guess George Clooney will fly in and he'll be in Syntagma Square making a pitch about this is a humanitarian crisis and the UN needs to help. And, you know, it'll fall into that category, all because of negligence.
And the majority of the mainstream media, when discussing Greece, they talk about the lazy ouzo-drinking Greeks, who it's their fault they don't pay taxes. Christine Lagarde mentioned this. But nowhere has Christine Lagarde, regarding the three European countries that have collapsed and turned to the IMF, three of the five, Iceland, Ireland, and Greece. There's something they share in common, Max, and here's a special report how a Greek bank infected Cyprus. And it's talking about this billionaire Greek tycoon and his Marfin Investment Group, and which owns a big bank. And upon investigating the bank, loans across the Greek banks that are now requiring 60 billion euros of cash injection. It's exactly the golden circle situation of Ireland and Iceland. The same thing. Apparently all the loans went to their friends and themselves. And two things happened. It misallocated capital and it took it away from other entrepreneurs that, from real entrepreneurs that could have built businesses, but there was no capital available for them, so because it was going to this guy and his friends for their failed enterprises, but their nice lifestyles, successful lifestyles. And secondly, now they've all collapsed. Those loans are bad, and the Greek people are having to bail it out. But the Greek people have a bad economy because of the guys like this who hollowed out the economy with using financialization.
Right, right. The economy gets hollowed out, extracting, essentially, vis-a-vis debt. And then the debt can't be paid. And, well, you know, it all goes back to the cost of debt, which is determined by the central banks. If central banks were to raise the cost of debt, it would be much more difficult for somebody to do exactly what you just said. And this is exactly the function of the monetary policies of these various central banks. It's called taking away the punch bowl. And it should have been taken away back in mid-1990s when Alan Greenspan spoke about irrational exuberance. At that time, he should have started to raise interest rates, but he didn't. Then long-term capital management collapsed, and they lowered rates to bail out that hedge fund. That was a huge piece of history in the history of moral hazard, where the central banks got involved to bail out their buddies, exactly what you just described. The friends were able to get loans from the Fed at near 0% interest rates, so all of the pensioners who are living on fixed income had to subsidize the bailout of long-term capital management through the mechanism, the transfer mechanism of the central bank lowering interest rates. Then you had 9/11, and interest rates were dropped back down to 1% to get the economy started again. But once but they were kept at 1% for a couple years, 2, 3, 4 years. I mean, they haven't really been taken off that percentage. And as a result, the cost of hollowing out economies and leaving them for dead, like in the case of Greece, is very, very cheap. There's no shortage of people who want to do this type of hollowing out of a country. But there should be some policies in place to restore capitalistic competition. There should be some competition. It shouldn't be just cronies stealing without any kind of cost to them. But, you know, the ECB, of course, they can't raise rates because they're completely captured by these crooks. Same thing by the Fed. Same thing, Bank of England. They're just totally captured by the crooks. So they're supposed to be independent, but they work for the crooks. And since this is a fiat currency world where there is no accounting standards tied to anything tangible, once you co-opt the central banks, you've captured the entire economy, and this is what we see right now.
You know, you've talked about Germany's role in this European debt fandango, well, apocalypse, however you want to look at it. And I'm coming to get the the Herald Tribune, and I read a piece which pins the blame directly on Germany. And this is from Floyd Norris. And he says that it was Germany learned three lessons from the 1992 experience. And that's when Italy and Britain were forced to abandon the peg to the Deutschmark, and as part of the getting ready for the European Monetary Union. And they learned three lessons from this 1992 experience. First, absent fixed exchange rates, its export-oriented companies faced the risk of periodic competitive devaluations from the rest of Europe. Second, a currency union could help German exports if the euro's value were held down by less competitive economies. This is what you've said many times on interviews. So they saw, when they were pegged to all these currencies, actually the Deutschmark soared. And this is why Britain and Italy were forced to just abandon and devalue, because they couldn't maintain the peg. And finally, if Germany adopted a low interest rate policy and super low rates arrived in European nations accustomed to high rates, banks could open the credit spigot and create a debt-financed boom in much of Europe. That would invite a mushrooming of imbalances. Ultimately, deeply indebted countries would force a crisis, one that they could solve only if they acquiesced to German policies and surrendered a large part of national sovereignty. Mm-hmm. So Floyd Norris is saying this was the plan from the very beginning, that the piece is called Has Berlin Forced Its Will on Europe?
Oh, well, you know, I was the first on Russia Today to make all of those suggestions. Maybe it's a year ago now, that Germany benefits from all of this, and to suggest that they were architecting it accordingly, I don't think is much of a stretch. And yet, when I made those suggestions, people were saying I'm Germany bashing, and it's inappropriate. But I'm glad that Floyd, you know, finally a year or two, you know, later, kind of put connected the dots, and you see clearly the benefits to Germany of all of this. And again, you know, you hear people in America right now, any pundit in America except Floyd, will when they're describing Europe, keeps talking about the Eurozone collapsing. Well, yeah, except for Germany. You know, Germany is a superpower. It's an emerging superpower. China is collapsing. The U.S. is collapsing. The U.K. is collapsing. You know, name an economy with the biggest export market in the world. Jobs are growing. Their social services are in surplus. Let's see. That would be Germany.
Yeah, and it's funny because we did this interview with Yanis Varoufakis just a few days ago. And I saw he posted it on his site. And a lot of people there who they're very pro-European, they said the only problem with the show is Max and Stacey see some sort of plan. Like, they go instead with the notion that every single one of our leaders and elites are all bumbling. They don't know what they're doing. It's all just bumbling. We bumbled into Iraq, even though all this information keeps on emerging that it was a coordinated conspiracy to invade Iraq. We see this today with Alistair Campbell saying about Rupert Murdoch pushed Tony Blair to accelerate the invasion of Iraq. But they don't want to see a conspiracy. It was just all bumbling and they didn't know what they were doing. And here in Europe, it was bumbling. Nobody knew what they were doing. Oh, Germany couldn't have possibly learned any lessons from 1992 exchange rate mechanism ejections. Nope, they didn't learn anything. They just bumbled on to the next thing and nobody ever knew anything. And it was just all happenstance that, you know, things fall into place exactly to the benefit of all those who are bumbling. We've bumbled into all these wars in the Middle East, even though Jeb Bush and Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney said exactly how they would fall, and exactly those nations are falling. But we've just bumbled in there. It doesn't, you know, it's all just mm-hmm. happens by accident. We couldn't have possibly planned this.
Well, because nobody wants to admit that they are in part partially responsible mm-hmm. for these wars and these catastrophes, economic catastrophes. If they were to really sit down and admit the fact that they intuitively at least know what's going on, then they would have to ask themselves, well, how come they're not doing anything about it personally? But this way they can give themselves an out by saying that it just happened, they bumbled into it, and it was just something no one could have seen coming, and we can't predict what will happen. Just that's been false over and over and over again for the past 10 years. All the wars and all the financial catastrophes have all had, to some degree, either small or great, complete planning, premeditation for the exact result that we've seen: extreme concentration of wealth at the top. That's the goal. And people who don't claim to see it are people who are too lazy to take any responsibility for it.
Well, there you go. Okay, that's that.
I'll read that later.
Yeah, I know. You have to read that.
I'll look at it. Floyd, I never read it.
I only remembered it just when we were talking about this.
You're smart.
And I did think I had to show that to you.
So we're going to be in St. Petersburg. We're going to be in Moscow and St. Petersburg next week, starting next Monday. I guess we can talk about it on next week's show, though. Can we have another show?
Yeah. Yeah, because we're actually going to next week's show. We'll be coming to you from St. Petersburg.
Oh, yeah, it's very exciting. So, what's today? It's Saturday. We're leaving a week from Monday.
Max, we're leaving on Monday.
No, we're leaving on Monday. Okay. See, I knew that. That's right. So, we're leaving soon to go to Moscow and St. Petersburg. Those are in Russia for you Americans out there who might not be familiar. And
And by the way, I think for the British people in the audience here in London, they say Moscow.
What the hell? They don't know anything. Island, druids. So, yeah, we're going to be there. I'm going to be, it's interesting. Why am I going there? There's the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum 2012, which is like the East version of Davos, where everyone gets together in these panels and discussions and talks about weighty matters. I'm part of the press corps of a session on the 21st of June that'll be live on Peter Lavelle's show on RT, talking about European financial crisis. So it's me, some guy from CNBC, and some other reporter, and then a panel of four or five banker types. And we'll be, I guess, live on the air for 60 minutes. And, my thoughts are well known. I'm curious to see how it all shapes up. I mean, what do you think, Stacey? Could be interesting or just a boring talk fest?
They definitely, we actually said no a few times to going. And they definitely wanted Max Keiser there to shake things up. I don't know what they're expecting, but you'll either see it in the news, the breaking news, right? Watching your Sky News or BBC News or whatever, you're going to see the ticker tape across the bottom.
Just out of curiosity, let's say, as a thinking exercise. Mm-hmm. Okay, what happens if, what could happen, honey? What do you think? Anything, I suppose, could happen.
Well, one never knows with Max Keiser. It really depends on how Max Keiser wakes up that morning and how he feels and who is on the panel and what they say that pisses you off and whether or not you run across the stage. And, remember, this is the place where, who's that oligarch who owns the Evening Standard when he was on some news show in a live news event? It was kind of like an entertainment live event. Like not like so hardcore news, but he got up and punched somebody in the face.
What happens if I do something like that? How does the law treat that situation in Russia for an American, especially if the assault is against another American?
Perhaps you get thrown in a gulag and Bill Clinton comes and tries to negotiate your rescue. You'd really be pissed off of that.
Go higher. I mean, there's a calculated risk here. It could be good for ratings, or it could be the time for the gulag. Is that the risk? It might be worth it.
Well, it depends on who the person you hit is, because if they're pressing charges, I always think that's kind of stupid to press charges. Really, mm-hmm. It's like your big girl's blouse.
Yeah. Well, so we're doing, it's an hour, it's live though, I'm pretty sure, so that's always fun, you can't, cut, and there's no commercials really, it's just one break in the middle, so you have like 26 minutes straight, so,
crosstalk, tell people.
Yeah, crosstalk, Peter Lavelle's crosstalk, so, Peter Lavelle's a moderator, so my guess is he's going to kind of get me into the mix early. So if I can mix it up early, I'll have 20 minutes of live television to, cause trouble, basically.
Well, the other interesting thing, Max, about this, I gave you this Floyd Norris piece about Germany and their lessons they learned from 1992 that they have applied to the rest of Europe, and now we have a debt crisis. Now, the other thing I read recently, and I believe it was in Business Week, was a really good long piece about what the lessons for the ruble breakup has for the euro currency union. And that is that, first of all, most importantly, currency unions don't fall apart from the periphery. They collapse because of the center. So there was a ruble zone. There were many nations that had used the ruble, but it was Russia that left it. And the others had to fall apart. Like there were already people little nations starting to fall apart, like and have a hard time maintaining pegs and stuff like that, and maintaining a low inflation and their debt situation. But what happened is Russia left. And it was pretty bleak, but at the end of the day, they all have their own function and currencies now, and they survive.
Well, let's talk about the most overrated country in the Eurozone, and that would have to be France. And now they're the downgrades have come to France. They're downgrading their debt. The bond vigilantes are starting to attack French debt. And at the end of the day, France is a lot closer to the Club Med countries in the south in terms of their poor economic performance and overrating on the debt side than they are into Germany. So France and Germany are now going to have to figure out what they're going to do with each other because the French economy is a lot closer to Greece than Germany. And the French, are so amusing in their ways. It's everything is based on the superficial interaction between high-end French luxury goods makers and restaurants and oligarchs. And it's all very superficial. Once you get back into the kitchen and once you get back into what the country actually does, as far as an output is concerned, it's not much there.
No, well, they have good agricultural products. I don't know how much they export. They seem to consume a lot internally, domestically. But they're big in the nuclear and also forcing nations around the world, like the big, they own a lot of the water rights around the world, their companies. And, this is more of a luxury, like almost a seigniorage that they have as part of a former imperial power, but one that still exerts a lot more power based on their friendships. It's like this golden circle of guys who get to dole out the capital of the world. So they have income streams coming in from places like Bolivia, where they own the water rights. They force peasants around the world to subsidize their own peasant class here. It's all relative.
It's incredibly subsidized country. The people are in Paris that we see every day, their life is subsidized by the state to a large degree. And the state is now waking up to the fact that it's running out of money, like these other European countries. So when you take away the state subsidies, you don't have that. This is why 500,000 or 600,000 French people have moved to Britain, because it's easier to start a company, to work, to get money, to make a life for yourself. Here, it's virtually impossible to do that. So you have this state subsidies that are really running the whole show, and people are very arrogant about their state subsidies. Imagine a welfare queen, wearing a Chanel gown, and you have Paris.
Well, the problem with France, though, is the state does provide a lot for, however, mostly people over 35, 40, who were from the old regime. The new regime is such that, most youngsters out of college for years and years and years, they contribute, but they don't get back. So they're subsidizing the lifestyles of these people who get to retire at 55. And with very big benefits packages, but they themselves get none. So they're figuring if I'm going to live like that, I might as well move to London where, you can make more money. It's a harder lifestyle. It's not as cushy as life here, but at least you're escaped from paying the taxes to these, cranky, passive aggressive people smoking all over the place.
Well, yeah, but even so, the The dole, here is something that, the people say in Paris, they don't say they're between jobs. They describe their jobs as being between handouts, between, welfare checks. So a job is something you do just to qualify for welfare. It has no other purpose than that. And that's the attitude. People, once they are in a job, they're like, they're waiting, counting down the days to get fired to go back on welfare. And so this is true in the young generation as well. And you see this everywhere you go. People are very, very upset that they have to put in a few weeks at some stupid job before they can go back getting their welfare check.
Well, I was reading on Misha's site about basically 100% of any of the jobs created since the global financial collapse in America is they're self-employed. And, in America, if you're self-employed, you have to pay the unemployment insurance on all your income. Mm-hmm. So, but you yourself, should you become unemployed, cannot receive anything back. So you're paying for insurance. It was with unemployment insurance in America is like you're paying for an insurance product. The state guarantees what is like 6 or 9 months of some of your income back should you become unemployed. But here, these people have to pay this insurance, but they do not qualify for it. They can't possibly receive any unemployment should they become unemployed due to, say, injury or a collapse in the economy or whatever.
Well, that's where the so-called Obamacare is going. People will pay for this health benefit, and then discover that 90% will not be eligible for it.
Yeah.
But you'll still have to pay for it.
Yeah.
So that's the model there.
Yeah, that's a good point. They'll just say, well, you have to work for yourself. That means you're not in the golden circle of people who can get jobs at the federal government because it's just Obama's mates right now. Next time it could be Romney's mates. It's always going to, next time it could be Rand Paul's mates. So, as soon as you go enter the corrupt system, it doesn't matter. The system itself is corrupt and people get all passionate and shrieking about, oh, I can change the system by electing this one good guy. We're going to put Rand Paul into the system. We're going to inject him into a system, a cesspool of corruption with 50 other senators and hundreds of congresspeople, all corrupt. The system is corrupt, but he's going to change it. Well, what happens? The system corrupts you. You get a lot of power and a lot of wealth and power, most importantly.
Yeah. Well, I think in Rand Paul's case, though, I don't think he ever had a moment in his life where he knew he wasn't going to go to Bilderberg, as he did this year, and was told to support Romney and then come out and support Romney and abandon the entire so-called Tea Party, so-called Liberty Movement.
Yeah. You said that early on.
Yeah, well, he never appeared to me to be anything other than a weasel. I mean, he is Ron Paul's son, and Ron Paul has spoken a great deal about the central banking system and why it's bad, and okay, it's done a good job doing so. But Rand Paul never, I guess the one thing he said last year, which showed maybe a spark of life, was that he was going to try to audit Goldman Sachs or something like that. And when he said that, I said, oh, wow, maybe this guy is going to actually take on the financial terrorists in America and go against terrorism. But that was all for show and meaningless, and now he's... So what do you think of that Luke Rutkowski video? Luke Rutkowski is really the only frontline journalist out there with a camera who's confronting these people face to face. And you've seen him, I'm sure. He's been on a number of shows and outlets like Alex Jones and our show and other shows. So he did another pretty interesting video where he is in the parking lot around Washington, D.C., and he's talking to Rand Paul, trying to get a conversation started. Then they go into the Capitol building itself, which was very good, with one of his associates. And he is confronting Rand Paul about his Mitt Romney endorsement and Bilderberg, and the fact that just a few months ago, Luke had interviewed Rand Paul in a similar style, and Rand Paul said he was against everything Mitt Romney was for. Now he's for everything Mitt Romney is for, and that all happened in a matter of a few months around this Bilderberg meeting. So what do you think about all that?
Well, actually, the previous interview was from before the last elections, before he was a senator. So he wasn't a senator when he was talking about the Bilderberg group and talking about Alex Jones. This was Rand Paul interviewed by Luke Rutkowski. Now, but in those 2 or 3 years, you can see a huge difference in the whole demeanor of Rand Paul. He's got power now, and you see it. You see that he has more confidence. You see it in his the way he's dressed, his haircut. He's like, he's a player now. He's playing the game. And these guys out there in the liberty movement, he is obviously thinking along with his buddies, his golden circle in the Senate, that these guys are bonkers and nuts.
Right. Now, the reaction in the alternative media universe, let's say it over there, InfoWars and other spots, is they are mad. You know, they're not buying into this political expediency argument that this is a setup to put Rand Paul in the White House in 2016, which is absolutely the stupidest thing I've heard all year. That assumes that Mitt Romney, if he wins, is going to somehow step aside in 4 years to let somebody else take over? No. So the earliest you're talking about here is 2020, which is more than a lifetime, considering all the corruption and all the other problems that are circling around the toilet bowl at present. So that's a ridiculous statement to make. But they are so they haven't bought into that. And they seem pretty mad. So do they have, they didn't have the power to put somebody who had their interests in a position of power, but do they have the power to keep somebody who's actively working against their interests now, that would be a Rand Paul, keep them out of power?
That'd be a big N-O.
So then without any political power at all, to affect politics that are happening on the front line. I mean, the Paul people are in government, and the ability to influence them has now turned out to be zero. I mean, you have some ex-politicians like Jesse Ventura, who is used to be in government, and he goes on a lot of TV talk shows, and he's got a lot of visibility, but his ability to influence political outcomes is zero. The Paul father and son team, the ability to influence them has turned out to be zero. And so the alternative media space is confronting, has to be soul searching a bit, because it, I think, was under the impression that it had some political influence. But now it must be said that as of this writing, as of this broadcast, the political influence of alternative media is a big fat zero.
Well, remember, it's the Leo Straussian model. They will feed your passion, provided it is in a like a religious or anti-science or things like that. That they'll stoke and feed for you because it benefits them, because they know for the fact, for example, that they have rational thinking. Minds around them to make sure they continue to live well and their family will survive. They have people, great scientific minds, working on projects for themselves. But they'll pretend to these masses that, science is evil and they don't believe in science and science is bogus and blah, blah, blah. They'll feed you that. But don't go near the military-industrial complex or the finance-industrial complex that feeds them, no way. They will just ignore you and marginalize you and call you crazy.
Yeah. So now one character in all of this is an interesting character is Lou Rockwell, who he is somebody who gets on mainstream media in America. He also gets on alternative media. And I know that he was interviewed recently on InfoWars. I don't know if his what he said on InfoWars. I'm pretty sure that he was trying to justify this Rand Paul thing in some way. I didn't see anybody following up by jumping on the Lou Rockwell bandwagon there. But Lou Rockwell is another character, and of course he represents part of the Austrian school of economics thinking, the libertarian school of thinking. And so that entire sector of the debate has now been kicked in the teeth. Now, I think that they should step up and say that we have been kicked in the teeth and have a reaction to it, and not to contort themselves. And part of the Austrian school of economics and part of the libertarian school that is so unacceptable is that every time it's proven to be wrong, as in the case now of Rand Paul, they contort themselves and they change their mandate and they change their philosophy to accommodate the transgression, to accommodate the fact that they just got proven to be wrong in some way. And as a result, if you ask 10 people, tell me what the Austrian School of Economics is, you'll get 10 different answers, because they can't give you a hard, fast answer because it's been proven wrong a few times. And so they've had to adjust their thinking to create these caveats to the school, which ends up being not a philosophy at all, but a very wonky piece of software that is, you know, the engine of just more fraud.
Well, first of all, Lou Rockwell is the guy who wrote those infamous Ron Paul newsletters, which were racist. Second of all, no American will even know what Austrian school is. They'll call it libertarianism. So right there, you have a step removed. And even in America, a lot of those Austrians will just say it's von Mises. They won't say it's Karl Menger. They won't go back to the origin. So now they have your several steps removed, so they'll just call it libertarianism. And within 5-10 years, in America, libertarianism will mean being anti-abortion, being pro-God, being anti-evolution, and teaching creationism in school. These kind of things is what it'll eventually morph into. And it is done through a process of, the elites, the Leo Straussians, count on the fact that they can present you with what you want to hear and then slowly change around the outsides, and you will accommodate the obvious falsehoods. You will make the, you know, close the gap in your mind. You'll do it for them, mm-hmm. because you have to maintain yourself.
Right. To maintain the illusion and the delusion that somehow you're connected to power.
Yes.
Okay. Lou Rockwell is not connected to power. The people who work with Lou Rockwell, like a Gary North, for example, who you see often on his site, they're not connected to power. And they do contort themselves continuously to make it appear as though their philosophy is being adhered to, instead of just they're a front for a bunch of jackbooted thugs who are stealing everybody's money under the guise of some philosophy that has long since left the train station, that they don't quote Karl Menger and the original Austrian school at all. You know, that's completely ignored. So that's why my approach has always been, as you know, to target prices, because prices are easy for everyone to see and it's an easy direction to understand. If the price of something that we don't like a JP Morgan, is going down, we're winning. If it's going up, we're losing. Now, this is a very straightforward and basic way to attack the forces of financial terrorism. And a few people get it. I see just in the past week, we had a couple of people jump on this finally over there at the Smart Knowledge University. Our friend wrote a long piece about why crash JP Morgan buy silver makes sense. We didn't get any credit for it, but that's okay, I suppose. But they finally understand that price is something that can be understood by many people and should be used to rally the troops. It's something that, unfortunately, I never got the InfoWars people to fully understand. You know, they are afraid to crash the price of something.
Yeah, but that happened, Max, around the same time as these elections, and they're putting all of their energy and faith and passion in Rand Paul and Ron Paul. So it was they were looking for two men who could possibly, you know, save them, help realize their vision. And, you know, men are fallible people. Silver isn't.
Well, that's the battered wife syndrome. You know, the battered wife, no matter how many times she gets battered, will come back to support her husband. And this is the problem over there in the alternative media space, is no matter how many times they get battered by lying politicians, they always come back for more. They don't want to escape the matrix by snuffing out one of the one of these people using price and targeting price.
Well, honey bunny, we have only a few moments left on this show. So, you know, is there, by the way, you know, we should mention the fact that how many billions, hundreds of billions is this new bailout package for stimulus package for Britain? Another new round of money printing, waves of money coming down the pike.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of price, you know, Syriza down in Greece, which is they're on track to get, win this weekend because people are reacting to the fear of a market crash by putting in Syriza. So in the last 2 days, you saw the markets in Greece rally. Bank stocks were up. Stock market was up. And I think we'll see now if Syriza can overcome this rally. A week from now, 2 weeks from now, markets will be back to all-time lows. But to the extent that markets and the price propaganda that comes with manipulating prices were able to somehow take the heat from Syriza by suggesting that, oh, things will be better now. See, the market's going higher. If that's used to deflate the engines of Syriza, and especially if now they do win, they'll come back and crash the markets. And in order to stage a spectacular crash, you needed an interim rally. So to me, again, markets are being used to manipulate the public's actions. And I go back to the fact that the public has it within their ability to manipulate prices back. But for some reason, I guess it's because, again, under the Leo Strathian model, most people are unwilling to believe that they're being manipulated. And they like to think that they're free. And so to really fight back, they have to first admit that you're being manipulated. And most people don't want to make that admission. They'd rather just continue on as if they're free, quote unquote.
Well, actually, to tell you a price on Syriza on Intrade, they're now down to 33% prediction chance that they'll win tomorrow. Yesterday, they were down to 25%. So there's according to Intrade, they're saying it's a 70% chance that New Democracy will win. But there you go.
Now, polling is illegal in Greece.
Yeah.
Intrade, you know, I'm wondering how they get around that. Because
it's a bet. It's a gambling site. It's not a poll. It's not going out and calling Greek citizens.
They call itself a prediction market, though.
Yeah, but it basically what's against the law is any polling company in the world using a phone or an internet, an email, for example, and contacting a Greek citizen and asking them what their intention is tomorrow. The Greek citizen can go on Intrade and anonymously participate in this by placing their bets. But we have to go.
Well then, bye y'all.